Support for Politics and Public Policy reporting on SDPB is made possible by SDN Communications, your business broadband provider. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. A swiftly tilting race for mayor in Sioux Falls, the ongoing political consequences of South Dakota v. Wayfair, and how the state stands out in direct democracy. It might not be how you think. We've got the Dakota Political Junkies this week, and with us, Dana Ferguson. She's a watchdog government reporter for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. Dana, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
And you might be having a busy day, you and the staff at the Argus Leader, as you're kind of in the middle of a mayor's race. We had Jolene Letcher on the program just a little bit ago, and Paul Ten Hankin joins us tomorrow. Some controversy as things start heating up. The words back and forth are getting a little more intense. How are you seeing this?
You know, it's never a dull day, it would seem, in this race. I sit right across from Joe Sneedy, our city government reporter who's been very, very closely following this race for months now, and he has just had quite a time of it. He has many, many stories at argusleader.com. You should read them. But yes, we've been seeing quite a back and forth emerge here. There is a hacking drama. There is a voicemail drama. So all kinds of drama in this race, everything you could wish for in a last week of a runoff election, I suppose. So any number of things I suppose we could talk about here.
But, right. I think for the rest of the state who might not be up on all the details, we should just say candidate Jolene Letcher has gone to law enforcement and said some of her emails and campaign data was hacked into. There's an ongoing investigation. In that, she also has released a voicemail that her opponent, Paul Ten Hankin, left her about where he talks about having tools in his toolbox to sort of come at her with, less than, I don't know, how do you characterize that? What exactly did he say? How are you characterizing that to listeners? The voicemail, yeah.
It's an interesting thing because we have received pieces, or we received the whole voicemail, but they asked that we not release it in its entirety. So from an editorial standpoint, our newsroom has opted not to really pull from that voicemail just because we want our readers to know the context of it. If we are going to be talking about it, we think that's important. They deserve that. And so I know that other media outlets have released snippets of it, which do indicate that Ten Hankin said, you know, I have tools in my toolbox. There's been some discrepancy about the context of that, whether they were talking about sort of running a clean campaign, exactly what that meant. And that came after a story from our paper, which looked at Ten Hankin's past. He'd been involved in Senator Rounds' campaign. There had been some issues with phishing. He said at the time, Ten Hankin did, that it was part of his job to work doing some of that. So there's been, it seems, some misunderstanding. It doesn't seem it's quite clear exactly what's going on. Obviously, there's another level of this as it comes days before the election. And as people are starting to vote early, so some clarity would arguably be very helpful here.
Right. And I did talk to Paul Ten Hankin yesterday, asked him that question. We'll have that conversation on the show tomorrow. But just for people to understand what he said in the context of his debate with Jolene Letcher was when he mentioned tools in his toolbox, he mentioned having dirt on all the candidates. What he meant was that as a candidate, people always come up to you and say, hey, I've got this information, or hey, I know this about so-and-so. And he has, in his words, you know, not been interested in going down that path. So that's how he's sort of contextualizing, and you'll be able to hear that whole conversation with him on tomorrow's In the Moment. Dana, do you remember, or is Joe remember a Sioux Falls mayoral race that's really been this contentious? Is this just par for the course, for a big city like Sioux Falls, or is it kind of a turning point?
It seems a little outstanding, and I think that is also because we haven't seen a whole lot of this direct one-on-one fighting or
sure.
campaigning against one another quite so much, just because of the large candidate pool that we saw initially. So now it's kind of the last couple of days to get their jabs in before
right.
the voters decide. I imagine each wants to paint him or herself in the best light possible and make sure that voters know about any setbacks that they may have faced. But again, we don't quite know at this point exactly what those were or what the impact of those was, who staged them or anything to that degree. So it's really hard to understand exactly what that will mean for this contest, sure. especially as it comes very late in the game.
Right. Let's pivot a little bit and talk about South Dakota v. Wayfair, because you have a story on ArgusLeader.com. You wrote with Jonathan Ellison, and then there's quite a bit of sort of political jockeying about this court case in front of the Supreme Court as well. How did we get here? Give us a little bit of background, and we'll talk a little bit about how the candidates are using this to gain votes.
Certainly, because it's never too early to start talking about the primary.
Right.
We have been already on this show. But back in 2016, South Dakota lawmakers passed Senate Bill 106 at the time, which essentially said anyone, the large retail groups that want to sell in South Dakota but don't have a physical presence here, they need to start remitting sales tax. At the time, lawmakers knew it was going to cause a stir. It was going to directly contradict a prior Supreme Court decision, which had said that remote sellers did not have to remit. They were prepared for the legal fights that would ensue. Over the past couple of years, we've seen those play out, first in district court, state Supreme Court, and just a couple of weeks ago now, in the U.S. Supreme Court, where Attorney General Marty Jackley made the case for South Dakota's law, saying that the precedent should be reconsidered, that in the age of the Internet, there should be more money that comes back to the state. It should be the responsibility of e-retailers to be doing that, to make it a little bit fairer for those groups that actually hold a presence in the state. And now we're waiting a little bit. We're going to see what the Supreme Court thought of those arguments, whether they think that it's time to change this or if it's not their place to make this decision. So it's something we'll be waiting on for a while. But as you mentioned, it's never too soon, I suppose, to start bickering or politicizing it. So most recently, we saw Jackley's campaign come out and say, you know, part of the reason that we could lose this case as a state is that Congresswoman Kristi Noem, who's also running for governor as a Republican, has previously made statements that appear to be opposed to the state's law and to our victory as a state in the case. And her campaign sort of threw back some punches and said, you know, actually, if the state loses, it would be Attorney General Jackley's fault. He's the one who's done something wrong here. So some fireworks coming out early. I imagine they are the first of many we're going to see over the next couple of weeks.
Right.
But I guess we don't know yet.
How do you, you know, fast forward a little bit and project, how is it going to play out in the future? Do you think just like it is now with jabs back and forth, or do you think voters are really going to weigh Wayfair in the ballot box?
I guess it's hard to know. On the one hand, the voters who will turn out to the primary election will be the folks who are very tuned into this, very aware of what's going on with the candidates, watching them. And primary voters tend to be a little bit more partisan. potentially more so than those who turn out to the general, can be a little bit more of a moderate group. So there's a good chance that those who are going to be voting in June are really watching this closely and trying to weigh whether this is something that matters to them, if this is something they want to see in a candidate. Additionally, I think politicos in South Dakota are watching this back and forth and starting to say, you know, we've been sort of waiting for this to happen. I think many have anticipated sort of a heated primary campaign. It kept fairly cool during the course of the legislative session. Even through the beginning of April, there were some minor sort of statements back and forth through their campaigns, but nothing quite as direct as this. So as we head into debates and forums and that sort of thing over the next couple of weeks, this seems to be, in my opinion, the first major dust-up we've really seen. So it's kind of interesting to see it, and it'll be fun, I suppose, to see whether voters care about this or if it just doesn't matter to them at all.
So these two candidates, Attorney General Marty Jackley and Congresswoman Kristi Noem, are some heavy hitters. They've been doing this for a long time. And in the Sioux Falls mayor's race, you've got Paul Tenhaken and Jolene Letcher, who are both coming from the private sector, business owners. Are you seeing, you know, when you compare those two campaigns, are the people who are just sort of, and I know you've written also about, you know, more women running for office, more newcomers running for office, people trying to get in the ring, and they get in there, they're going to get beat up a little bit. And both Tenhaken and Letcher have gotten beat up a little bit, but so do Jackley and Noem. Do you see a difference, or do you think it's just watching the new, fresher candidates sort of shake it off a little bit and figure out, oh, this is what I got myself into?
It's hard to tell. And part of that is that, as you mentioned, the mayoral candidates both are fairly new to the political world. And obviously they're a lot more different when it comes to their political ideologies. You have Paul Tenhaken, who is pretty conservative. You have Jolene Letcher, who seems to be fairly progressive. So in that respect, I think you have two candidates who are pretty distinct. And so it would make sense that they're able to sort of distance themselves from one another, really show how each is unique. But I would say you're right in assessing that they maybe weren't quite so ready for the jabs, political jabs that might come out, either because they're new at this or because they didn't want there to be a dirty campaign of any kind. And so far, they'd really succeeded in that. It was pretty clean up until the last bit of it here. Whereas in the gubernatorial primary, you have two candidates who are ideologically pretty similar. And so now they are going to be aiming to sort of separate themselves on smaller things where there is quite a bit that sort of ties them together. Far as being religious, conservative Republicans. In a lot of ways, they're alike, but they don't want voters to think about that over the next several weeks as they get ready to vote in the primary. I think both of them have seen campaigns that haven't always been pretty. We've seen them fight their own battles in the past, so I think they were ready for it. There was the call from the Jackley campaign to have a clean campaign, which nobody really signed on to that. So they decided that's not what they're doing, and get ready to watch over the next several weeks.
I wonder what that looks like in practice. You know, if everybody says we're going to have a clean campaign and sign on to it, what, you know, that's just, we don't have to spend time on that. But I'm just wondering how does that actually play out, and what does that mean people will walk away from then? You know, in reality, let's switch though, because I want to make sure we get to this piece that you wrote about direct democracy in South Dakota being a standout, and maybe in a way that people don't realize. And it's has a lot to do with initiated Measure 22. Give me an idea of why, what your intention was as you sort of, you know, put this package together at ArgusLeader.com.
Sure. So it's a story that I had been thinking about for a while, just to give listeners a bit of background in case they are new to the whole conversation. Voters in 2016 approved initiated Measure 22, which had to do with reforming campaign finance and ethics laws. It was a big change, which came with a lot of out-of-state money, both for and against it. As soon as it passed, essentially lawmakers quickly took it to court, said it would prevent them from doing their jobs. Soon thereafter, the legislature gutted it, and there was some outrage in Pierre as those who really supported the effort came to the Capitol and tried to make their support for the proposal known and said, you know, we're not happy about this and we're going to make sure that this doesn't happen again. There were some pieces of it that were put into law, but not as much as supporters would have liked. So then in an effort to have a broader conversation about this, legislators had a couple summer studies that looked at this issue and looked at initiative and referendums. Out of that summer study came a slate of proposals that lawmakers considered earlier this year. Some of them passed, some of them didn't. Overall, they had a pretty strong success rate. But then came a number of other proposals from lawmakers who wanted to address out-of-state money, who wanted to restrict who would be able to bring these issues to the ballot. And essentially, there was a slate of additional issues or proposals that came from lawmakers who said, we just need to make it harder. We need to make it more difficult for someone who's not a South Dakotan, for a South Dakotan with an out-of-state idea to pass something at the ballot. Fast forward, we saw dozens of proposals considered. Many of them passed in the state legislature. And that is sort of interesting in a national scope in that South Dakota was a state that considered more bills than any other this year. Someone with the National Conference of State Legislatures said that, in fact, South Dakota was a standout this year in its efforts to make it harder to bring proposals to the ballot in whatever small way. So something that petition circulators have been very frustrated about, and those who brought the bill said is extremely important as out-of-state groups aim to bring additional policy proposals in the future. So it'll be interesting to see to what degree these laws now affect petition circulators' ability to bring policy at the ballot and what that will mean for voters in the future.
Right. You can find that piece at ArgusLeader.com. Dana Ferguson, thank you so much for your conversation today. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Lori.